What Darwin will mean for the 21st century has yet to be decided.
Mm-hmm.
It's ironic, isn't it, that so many people who are happy to wear the label creationist nowadays are concerned far more about the events at the beginning of history rather than the events which are likely to bring history to an end. I would like to see more creationists concerned about global warming than whether or not species were created by intelligent design or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The issue of intelligent design does relate to our concerns about molecular biology and the very small nanotechnology. We hear about that, little machines that we are able to make in laboratories, and what will happen if they're released into the wild. We've had this problem with recombinant DNA research. Mm-hmm. And intelligent design advocates have seized on this nanotechnology to show that there are very, very, very small machines in nature which show God's wisdom and beneficence. And they're holding this up at a time of turmoil to prove that there's a designer and a God who's in control of this whole historical process. It's very much like when Darwin was a young man, people were holding up the machines, in the structure of our bodies, the joints and the pulleys and the levers and so forth, as evidence that God was a mechanic and had designed those machines. Mm. That was a time of social turmoil as well, and people were flocking into factories and manning machines.
Mm-hmm.
But the question isn't being addressed by creationists and those who call themselves believers in intelligent design. The question that Darwin, I think, would ask today as to whether it's just a case of sic transit gloria mundi with a vengeance, as if this is all going to end with a vengeance. And so passes the glory of the world with a vengeance, as if we're bringing this all to end by ourselves. Darwin never saw that. He saw a natural ending, in the heat death of the universe. The sun will go out someday.
Mm-hmm.
We are now confronting the possibility that the tree of life will be extinguished by our own efforts or our own neglect.
And I'm sure that is really the challenge for...
I would like to see a tenth of the amount of energy being put into intelligent design to addressing the question of global warming and the end of the Earth rather than the beginning.
In the beginning of our conversation, you noted that you started out in your life as in fundamentalist or evangelical Christian circles with a negative view of Darwin, being raised with a negative view of Darwin. And I think you've already begun to tell me the answer to this question, but I would like to hear about how you react. Now, you are American, but you're now living in Britain, but how you react to, on a personal level, to the clashes more recently that have arisen in our culture that, again, take Darwin's name and take Darwin as a symbol. And are you still, can I ask you this, are you Christian now? Are you evangelical?
Well, that's the kind of question I don't answer on the radio.
All right. All right.
Milton Rosenberg asked me that once on WGN, and I didn't answer it because you lose half your audience either way.
Yeah.
I would say I'm religious, I'm spiritual, but, the real answer to the question, am I a Christian, is what else could I be? I've spent my life immersed in Christian cultures. I was brought up on Christian values. There are ways I can't look at the world even if I would wish to.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways of behaving which I associate very much with Western Christianity. I don't accept an intellectual definition of Christian. I accept much more of a behavioral and a communitarian definition of what a Christian is. And then it's always a question whether anyone is a Christian all the time.
Right. Let me ask you the question this way. I think we all, whoever we are, wherever we came from, as we grow older and in whatever we do, we still wrestle with where we came from and I think try to incorporate that into who we become. I mean, I'm curious, as you have done this scholarship for coming on 40 years now and just lived your life, how do you reconcile that attitude that you grew up with, those teachings you grew up with? Do you find new ways to bring those questions and even those fears together with what you now know about who Darwin was and about what this science brought into the world?
The old questions don't preoccupy me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I've settled the issue about whether the Bible teaches science. Of course, it doesn't teach science. It may teach knowledge of nature in its own time, but it's not about science today. I turned to Darwin because I thought I was going to learn something about, you know, a potential friend. This is going to be somebody like me. I could get some guidance from his life, his example.
Which is to say, I mean, when you say like me, you mean struggling to bring together...
Someone being brought up religiously mm-hmm. and who was sort of destined for the church and changed his course of life.
Mm-hmm.
I did too, you know. I got a scholarship. I came to Great Britain. Mm-hmm. I studied for a PhD. I stayed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in my life, being able to come to Europe in the 1970s was made as much difference as getting that pass on HMS Beagle
right.
for Darwin,
right.
obviously with much more revolutionary consequences in Darwin's case.
Yes.
But it was a life-changing experience
mm-hmm.
to sail abroad, as it were, to Europe to study Darwin. Mm-hmm. And that has changed my life in many ways. I think I have to answer as a biographer.
Okay.
Because I've taken particular interest in a number of individual lives and continued to work on several. A biographer is in a position of God. A biographer sees the end and the beginning and yet is not in a position to control what happens, but to control the story that's told about what is happening in that life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a huge responsibility to feel, you know, I always sort of hold my hand out in front of me as if, you know, it has the life within it. It has all of those artifacts and sources that go to make up a story. And I think, what a responsibility to have this handful. The mm-hmm. world will come to see this person if I'm successful in the way that I believe the world needs to see that person. Not in a definitive way, because there'll be another Darwin before long.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't ended the discussion.
Right.
But in so doing, one sees oneself as a being in time, and that's pretty sobering, you know.
Well, you know, I thought I wanted to study Darwin. I thought I'd find someone like myself. I heard a but in there, and I wondered what would follow that but.
Ah, yes, I thought I would find someone like myself, but I discovered he lived in a different world. I hadn't really become historical at that stage.
Okay.
A historical consciousness hadn't come over my understanding either of the Bible or of the Victorians, really.
Mm-hmm.
And there are chapters in the Darwin biography I wrote with Adrian Desmond, which I believe could not have been written with a tithe of the depth such as there is, had I not been here to do the work, to live on the spot. Here I am in Cambridge, England, where I live,
mm-hmm.
where Darwin spent 3 or 4 years of his life. And to be able to walk the streets he walked and to sit in the places and to go to his room and to see his manuscripts, it really does help to bring him back to life for me and for me to bring him back to life for other people.
Mm.
Other biographers have written this way too. There is a quest,
right.
But always when you reach out at that very moment, the subject vanishes like a will-o'-the-wisp. This happened to me once when I went up to Glen Roy in Scotland. Glen Roy is an extraordinary place. Darwin visited the week Victoria acceded to the throne in 1838. He was feeling on top of the world. He had the summer before him. He just spotted the woman he wanted to marry, and he trudged off into the hills with his notebooks and his knapsack. And Glen Roy has quite an enigmatic geological formation. It has a series of what look like roads parallel. They were former beaches when the water was at different levels in the glen. And there are three of these sort of curves. And Darwin walked up onto the second ancient beach and perched himself and surveyed the landscape and talked about what he saw. I did the same thing. I did the same thing mm. in 1986. And I found the spot, because there was an engraving with a tree growing out of a rock, and I sat where Darwin sat, and I communed with him, and I scratched notes to myself on the back of my map. And then suddenly a jet aircraft passed overhead, and then a Land Rover came grinding up the glen, and he vanished. His world was not mine. I could not go back and live his life. I had to use other kinds of magic to reconstruct it for readers.